You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Never forfeits a game.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's the Around the NFL Podcast. I'm Dan Hansis. With me, some heroes, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. And I know, boys, that your teams weren't on the right side of the ledger on this Sunday. But I do, I have to say, I'm in a good mood because the Jets weren't involved. And that's where we're at with my fandom. When they don't play, my life's better. Maybe that's something. Maybe the Chris Wessling dossier about the Bengals, like this is kind of what he was getting at.
Yes.
From a more above the treetops. That said, I'll never leave my fandom. But I get why it's probably a healthier move.
I always thought moving to the West Coast from the East Coast where we all grew up, the games start at 10 a.m. and, you know, typically the Jets and Browns and Patriots would be on at 10 a.m. and you'd go back in the day before we started doing this. I'd go watch them. The Browns get shellacked somewhere. But the great thing was, the butt kicking ends around 1:20 p.m. Right. And you still have the rest of your Sunday. When you're here, you're sort of still just doused in right. the ill
marinating in it.
Yeah, I mean, you got people laughing and giggling throughout the office. So.
I don't know what you're talking about. First of all, my only
what
season
do you mean?
as an L.A. like fan was 2001. You know, the greatest.
And but Greg, you've had
ever.
A broad
but
career.
Then,
my mind is not.
I was going to say the Patriots. Yeah, sure they lost, but have you noticed they lead the league in moral victories? This
they
year.
Are
and
piling
like,
them up.
I'm more of like a fan of football. I'm like Rob Lowe, you know, with the NFL on the. It's like they're really providing great entertainment, great ratings, and big time games. So I think the Patriots are winners.
I feel like you've taken a pill and you're saying exactly what certain people want you to say. All right, week 6 in the NFL. We're going to go through every game coming up a little bit later is Nick Shook, our buddy, who's going to help us out navigating the day that was in the NFL. Mark, good to have you back for a Sunday show. We are feeling good.
I think we need to stop the Mark is back for each iteration yeah. of what we do. I mean, it's probably tiring right. Audio-wise.
The Thursday night recap, that'll
you know,
be the first
that's,
recap
that's
back.
Coming this Thursday. You know.
Ooh, Thursday night recap with an undermanned Browns team and a virtual must-win. I feel like I'm going to have a good Mark Sessler show lined up.
Nobody knows what will happen.
It's actually – you don't have to even do it. It's going to be Mark and Ernest Biner for Broncos-Browns.
We can pull it off. You could have the night off, too.
I would marinate in that. All right, let's get to it. Let's start, yes, with the moral victory of the day. It went down at Gillette Stadium.
Play fake. Boot to the right. Looking down the field. Lamb. 10-5. Victory. Cowboys win. The ghosts are exorcised.
Brad Sham, the Sham God, KRLD, with the call for the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. Dak Prescott connected with CeeDee Lamb on a 35-yard touchdown pass in overtime, the winning score in a 35-29 win for the Cowboys over the Patriots. The Cowboys have now won 5 straight games, and in this one they overcame a litany of mistakes, penalties, for the most part, some turnovers as well, and they outlast, yes, There are no moral victories in our league, but it was a very game Patriots team that battled in this game. And, Greg, one of the most exciting games of the year broke out of nowhere. The Cowboys dominated for most of the contest in regulation. Then the game changed with 3 touchdowns and 4 minutes of play in the fourth quarter. And in the end, the Pats got the ball, couldn't do anything in overtime, and then the Cowboys took over.
It felt inevitable, at least to me, after the 4th and 4, late in regulation, Patriots trying to get the Cowboys off the field, and Dak Prescott drops back to pass, and Matthew Judon wins with an inside spin move immediately. Like, that was the play, that was the move that you gave Matthew Judon all that money for. He could have been the hero. He is on Dak Prescott in under 2 seconds. Dak sees it, gets rid of the ball a little quicker than he wants, and delivers a perfect throw that only Cedric Wilson could catch, and Cedric Wilson makes an even better play to get it.
I know a lot of big plays, Cedric Wilson.
I know a lot happened after that. I know Mike McCarthy tried to give it away. I know Nelson Aguilar gave it away. I know Bill Belichick, you know, crawled up like a little turtle into a shell done for much of this season. But I think it comes down to no one's playing quarterback better than Dak Prescott. And I feel like the Cowboys offense can overcome so much. And today he did.
Yeah, I mean, we have to now look at the Cowboys as a legitimate Super Bowl contender. That's what they are. And Dak is playing as well as anyone in the league. And I think the game raises your opinion of everyone that played quarterback, because Mac Jones, I think, you know, as a first year rookie to come back with the ice cold counterpunch on that throw to Kendrick Bourne, the 75 yarder after the pick six. And, you know, you could see someone else crumbling there. It was, you know, it's a tough one for New England. But if you're a Patriots fan, I know Greg is basically taking the Patriots and throwing them off a cliff at this point.
That's not
You've got to say,
he
like,
got what he wanted.
I mean, long term, I mean, you have to be very encouraged by Mac Jones. But if you're a Cowboys fan, and it's been a while for them too, you're looking at something special in Dallas.
Yeah, and I think we all kind of saw the Cowboys even entering this week as a legit NFC contender to make it out of the conference, get back to the Super Bowl for the first time in a quarter century. So in its own way, this game, even though they didn't play, you know, the cleanest brand of football, this is different than other Cowboys teams as well, where you don't play your best game, where you shoot yourself in the foot constantly, and you still find a way to get the job done. And, Dak, the throws that he made in crunch time. I mean, the Patriots had, I think, 3 different chances to win this game in regulation on that final field goal drive. And every time Dak stepped up, including the huge downfield connection, I think it was a 25-yard strike to CeeDee Lamb on 3rd and 26 that got them into field goal range. So, you know, we also have, and this is a little inside baseball, but in the newsroom here, I recently discovered we have access to the truck feed. The truck feed, which shows you the telecast, no commercial breaks. You see all the raw feed. And we saw Dak limping significantly going into the tunnel after the game with a big smile on his face. But that is something to watch here. Again, this is a guy coming off a serious leg injury. You wonder if it's connected. But either way, he was unstoppable when accounted.
It's also a guy that throughout Hard Knocks basically told anyone bringing up his injury, go F you, because I'm going to get back on the field. So I think we're going to see him next week.
Well, I found it interesting. The Patriots seem to really load up and try to stop the Cowboys' running game and see what else could happen. J.C. Jackson was in man coverage. Man, he's made himself a lot of money this year. Like, J.C. Jackson's playing great, and he did for the most part in this game. But they almost dared the Cowboys, you know, to move the ball with throwing it up and down the field and then cause mistakes, and they did. But the moral victories, I said it with, you know, tongue in cheek, they've had chances to win these games. You know, you get the ball in overtime. You know, maybe you don't get a call here, but you had the Aguilar drop. And then you get the ball late in the first half, and you get the ball even with 25 seconds left. I know it's nothing, but Belichick sits on it. It bothered me more with 90 seconds left in the first half. Also, even punting on 4th and 3, I the way that the Cowboys offense was moving the ball on a field goal wins the game here. I wouldn't have hated them going for that either. I know that hands it over to them, but you've seen a very conservative, trying to win like it's 2001 style from the Patriots, and it's gotten them pretty close to beating the Bucks. It's gotten them pretty close to beating the Cowboys. but they didn't win either game.
It's also like this game, they had 14 plays in the first half and 45 in all of regulation before overtime. A bit of an aberration.
Very strange game because the Patriots scored 14 points on their first 7 plays from scrimmage, then went totally in the tank in the second quarter, shutout, third quarter, shutout, came to life and scored 15 in the fourth to take the lead, but it was not meant to be. I thought on the Dallas side here, I mentioned it, Cedric Wilson, it won't really jump out to you in the box score because he finished 4 for 42 on 7 targets. But I was surprised in multiple big spots in this game. Dak went to Wilson and he came through for them. And then CeeDee Lamb, I think a lot of people, myself included, saw this as his breakout year where he was going to go 100 for 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns. And he might still end up that way, but it's been quiet at times. 9 for 149 and 2 touchdowns and 11 targets. That's big boy pants performance, including the game winner. So, you know,
football. I mean, Trayvon Diggs getting a pick six to look like he's going to win, you know, to win the game when he's trying to get defensive player of the year, 7 interceptions, 6 games. That's just insane. Mike McCarthy appearing to make every wrong choice he possibly can, kicking the field goal with 2.5 minutes to go. That looked like that could have cost him. And when the Patriots like scored on their 75-yard touchdown pass on the very next play, I said, well, it's almost like they scored too quick. The only way you're just not going to stop this Cowboys offense. They got close. They got close a couple times, but it didn't happen.
You know, I defend McCarthy more than anyone on the show. I'm the only one that sometimes does because he is the head coach of this team that's 5-1 and everybody's in love with. But then when you see things like that, it's 4th and 1 with this offense and you settle for a 51-yard field goal late in the fourth quarter and Trayvon Diggs bailed you out with a pick six on the next series. But that doesn't matter because it's that type of stuff that you wonder in the crucible of the playoffs, if McCarthy's got another one of these up his sleeve. And I understand if you're a Cowboys fan who's nervous.
Even taking a timeout before the Zuerlein game-tying field goal with 20 seconds left when you could have just let it go to 5 seconds. It's just someone who's a little overwhelmed by the moment when it comes to game management.
The school
when you're not running the offense or the defense, then you got to be good at that.
That's the school it comes from, and I mean, that's who they knew they were hiring. I do wonder if you're Kellen Moore. Do you have like text threads with longtime friends saying this stuff drives me nuts because it's like
Moore. I will make the announcement here. Kellen Moore will be the next Dallas Cowboys head coach. I don't know if it's going to be 2022, 2023. At some point, he will just take over for Mike McCarthy.
It could have been 2020.
Right. It might be a situation where Kellen's like, I'm gonna take a job somewhere else if you don't hire me, although they control whether or not he's allowed to interview. And Mark, I will break some news. I can guarantee Dak Prescott is not playing next week. The Cowboys are on bye.
Oh,
gotcha, baby.
That's cute.
Let's roll.
That was effective.
Gotcha.
Another overtime lock there for Hanzus.
Lock it up, baby.
Mark Andrews and the Ravens put up
never
six
a doubt.
Points.
Come on, Grape Digger, give it to me. Give me my lock. I earned those.
Sorry.
Grape Digger filling in for Ricky. There it is. All right, now let's hit the
timing was tough on it. We put you in a
tough spot.
Hey, Jackson from the gun. Takes the handoff. Look at end zone. Fires. Touchdown! Mark Andrews and the Ravens put up 6 more points.
Jerry Sandusky with the call for WBAL. Lamar Jackson threw for a 167 and a touchdown. Not too impressive, but guess what? Didn't need to be. The Ravens defense shut down Justin Herbert and the Chargers. Final score 34-6. Greggy, the Bolts could not be stopped against the Browns on offense, and it was just a totally different story in this one.
It was insane. I saw a stat after the game that Justin Herbert was pressured on 33 of his 42 dropbacks.
33 of 42?
33 times in a single game. I've never seen anything like that. And they all weren't deep drops. I mean, sometimes this is a pretty quick throwing offense. Now, they got stuck in third and long quite a bit, and they've been so good on third and long and so good on fourth down. Maybe it was time for regression to happen. But regression works the other way, too. Sometimes there's positive regression. And to me, the Ravens' running game and their defense has been mediocre all year or worse. And in this game, they look like the old Ravens where they're blowing up holes, where it almost seemed like they were challenging how big a hole do we need for Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray and Le'Veon Bell to get through? Because it has to be huge in the plays take forever to develop. And guess what? They were big enough. And the defense, as I mentioned, with the pressure was old Raven style defense to the point where, as you mentioned, Lamar didn't need to do too much. He made some big plays from the pocket, but it was their run game. It was their defense. And I think if you're the rest of the AFC, the idea that the Ravens have gotten a little lucky to get out to this 4-1 start, but have a lot of room for improvement moving forward. They are a very scary team.
That's how
team.
I look at my locks this season. I'm off to a fast start. Some people say, oh, maybe a little lucky. But the just improvement is on its way.
That's
on top
one of the
it.
Biggest stories in this on the sports scene, Dan.
That's the way I look at it.
But Mark being back in the studio is so great just for the look on his face that he had right there.
It was not disgust. It's just like, it's you know, we will spend 40% of the show in various forms of self-promotion. And that's the first. By the way, Greg, I mean, that running on the Chargers has not been a huge chore for teams this year. I mean, the Browns had 230 last week. The Chiefs had 186. The Cowboys had 196. So that's a weak spot for them. But I think the Ravens, you were dealing with a completely new crop of running backs. You've had issues along the offensive line. They've had a month now to get into shape. And to me, I mean, it's like, I don't know how many other ways they can win games to provide enough proof for everyone watching.
Well, this way,
that they're the
this
toughest
is the way
possible.
That proves
this was
it
their
to
most
me.
Complete game.
To win 34-6 against a good team. You know, a lot of people, including myself, thought the Chargers would win this game. That's different, and that is scary. And you're right about the run defense for the Chargers, because Matt Money Smith was sitting in your chair one of those weeks. And look, he pointed
my
out
my chair.
You know, it is your chair. You own it.
I am agreeing.
Nice self-promotion, bro.
He said, like, their defense is sort of designed to funnel runs. You know, they want you to run the ball. But there's a point, and they were missing.
Do they want you to run for 230
right. No,
yards?
No, they don't. That's what I mean. Like, they were missing two linebackers today, Tranquil and Kazir White. They don't have anyone in their front seven who's good except for Joey Bosa. That ends up being a pretty big problem as they keep continuing down the season.
Yes, they were in total control of this matchup. All three of their veteran running backs, Latavius Murray, Le'Veon Bell, and Devonta Freeman, scored touchdowns.
Le'Veon Bell wearing number 17.
It's hard to watch Le'Veon
Even his
Bell.
Touchdown took like, it was like
so
a 3-yard run that took like an hour, it felt like.
Well, he's
like.
Very patient. We know that.
So patient. Yeah. But Herbert, 22 of 39, 195 yards, touchdown and a pick. Give them a pass. They've been great all year. Sometimes you have a bad week. This is the bad week for the Chargers, or is there something more to read into here?
Well, I think the defense is what I'm concerned about. The offensive line, we'll see if that continues. I almost thought like it was good for him to – he had a bad game too. He missed throws. He made bad decisions. On those 33 times he was pressured, he averaged 1.1 yards per attempt on those plays. So he was not coming up with the answers that he usually does. The defense is what I am concerned about, because I just don't think they're rounding into anything but way below average, which is not what Brandon Staley expected.
All right, so the Ravens, they really make – a statement there in week 6, Greg. And I have some breaking news. We're just talking about the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott and the truck feed and the limp heard around the world. It's a calf strain suffered by Dak on that final play of the game.
Oh.
And he will be reevaluated with an MRI to come on Monday. Like I said, they have a bye. So
sometimes it's your
timing.
Year. Like, that's maybe it's the Cowboys' year.
Unless he tore his calf, then it's.
Well, that's
what I said was not to worry
like
about it.
Week.
He has 2 weeks for us not to worry about it now.
Right.
So.
But we'll see. Calf can be tricky, and we'll see what the MRI comes up with there. All right. Let us move on.
Darrell Williams, a lone setback. They fake it to him. The quick pass, touchdown! Kansas City on the quick slant at the back of the end zone off play action. Tyreek Hill and the cheetah finds the sweet nectar of the end zone when the Chiefs need it the most.
Mitch Holdus with the call. WDAF. Has the glow returned? Maybe not. But Patrick Mahomes got his act together in the second half on Sunday, leading 3 touchdown drives to make up for 2 turnovers in the first half, and he led the Chiefs to a 31-13 comeback win at Washington. The defending AFC champions get back to 500 with the win, and came on a game where in the first half he threw his 7th and 8th interceptions of the year. He threw 6 all of last season, and the second one, which happened late in the first half with seconds to play on a 3rd down deep in Washington territory, he muffs the snap and shotgun, picks it up, and then kind of has like a panic where he just throws it up for grabs and it gets intercepted. And you're just thinking to yourself, what is going on with the Chiefs this season? Because Mahomes, that was probably the worst play of his career, you could argue. And you just wonder, is this really going to go sideways? Well, at least for this week, they got it together. And, Mark, the Washington football team is a good team to get healthy on against on offense, which you had never said before the season started. But that's just the way it is, because we saw it again as the big plays piled up for KC in the second half. Washington looked increasingly confused about what the hell was going on the field.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington defense, which has been under fire by, you know, analysts, rightly so, gave up 499 yards. So the glow is off a team that had 500 yards, put up 31 points, had 29 first downs, and a really bad play from Patrick Mahomes. I guess it's like October, 16th or something? I want to wait a little bit more time before I'm...
Today's October 17th.
Well, you know, I mean, there are facts that I'm missing.
What do you want to wait for?
I am not going to, you know, drive home and maybe, you know, veer off the highway over with concerns about the Chiefs at this point. I mean...
I am like,
well, they won today. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. 30-13. Like, if this is like,
the Washington football team is maybe the worst team in the league, other than the Jaguars, the Lions, the Texans. You know,
they're one of the worst teams.
Okay, that's a better way to say it. They're there for me
NFC.
Because they're asking Taylor Heinicke to try to keep up with this dreadful defense. It's just not going to happen. The Mahomes pushback is driving me a little crazy. First of all, that first pick was another drop. So he's had three picks. Three of those picks were dropped. And a few of them were these third down desperation plays, which he shouldn't make. This play reminded me a lot of the Ravens interception, which was one of the worst plays of his career, too. But I saw multiple tweets today. One mentioned his mother, that she couldn't make an excuse for this. I guess she was tweeting about it.
What?
This one wasn't like, his mom can't blame it on someone else. And then it asked the question, has the league figured Patrick Mahomes out?
Wait, who's tweeting this stuff?
Someone who I had to block, who
right,
has
me,
a lot
I'm
of followers.
Twitter,
who
Frank.
Has a lot of followers.
League
I blocked him just because sometimes your take is so
Mahomes.
Bad you don't get muted, you get blocked. Oh. And then SpotRack, which I love, did a tweet halfway through
Found
the game
him.
Again. Don't
did you say spice rack or
spot rack? You know that don't tweet halfway through games too much. They put up something about how much money he has left on his contract and how much is fully guaranteed, as if the contract was a problem. Just shut up. What are you talking about? They are literally first in the league in yards and points per drive this year. I just want to point that out. Just want to point that out.
I'm with you, although I'm after your tirade there, I would say it's 50-50, Dan, that I've been blocked by Greg at some point. Have I not annoyed him?
I found the guy that he blocked. I won't say who it is, but if you want to, just like I was able to put together the clues based on Greg's commentary, you could find it in seconds as well.
And that person probably or maybe or possibly is listening, and Greg is just burning more bridges left and right with media figures. So,
then have better takes than that.
It's a terrible take because, yes, if you are really watching the games, you're not seeing – a league that's figuring out Mahomes. You're seeing a little bit of a wonky start to the season, some bad luck, and then some pressing. And I thought the interception at the end of the second quarter, which is why I was just like scratching my head, is like, man, when have you seen Mahomes look kind of scatterbrained in a moment like that? And it just doesn't happen a lot. So I thought the second half here was very important for the Chiefs in terms of just, okay, let's calm things down. We're back to 500. The Chargers just got their ass beat, so they're not going to run away and hide on us. We have a chance to get this thing under control. So I think it's not a win that solves all their problems, but it's a very nice victory to take moving forward.
Right, and I'm not even trying to say there aren't problems. I'm just saying let's use the context that he's coming off the best first three seasons as a starter in the history of the NFL.
Three years ago that 3 years from now he's going to make this interception that has everyone, you know, mildly melting? Well, that it would be the one time he's done that, I take it.
All right. Let's take a break and then we'll bring in the pipe.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Second and 13, Cousins shotgun, looking to the left, steps up in the pocket, he'll fade to the end zone for KJ, caught, and touchdown! And the Minnesota Vikings have walked off on the Carolina Panthers!
Oh, Paul Allen with the call, KFAN. Kirk Cousins completed a 27-yard touchdown pass to KJ Osborne on the first possession of overtime, lifting the Vikings to a 34-28 win over the Panthers, who were 0-3 since their 3-0 start. Now, we welcome in, as promised, Nick Shook, the Pipe, who had eyes on this game and wrote about it for NFL.com. Shooky, for the second straight week, the Vikings gagged away a fourth quarter lead, and for the second straight week, they found a way.
They found a way after, I would say, 2 to 2.5 quarters of some of the most frustrating football you're ever going to watch. If you're a traditionalist, you say, well, that's just great defense. But if you're a realist, you realize that it was one offense struggling to move the ball against a good defense and the other offense struggling to do anything because its quarterback couldn't get out of its own way and they were missing their best playmaker on offense. And then that all didn't matter suddenly within the course of a blocked punt and a fourth quarter. Everything just flew off the handle. We ended up in overtime of a game that I didn't even know if we'd ever actually get to the end of because it was so quiet in Bank of America Stadium that I thought people might just fall asleep. It completely turned it on its head and became a thrilling game. But yeah, you know, we got a thrilling overtime finish, and really it was a product of the fact that the Vikings don't know how to close the game.
This was a Sessler game too, and he was very frustrated at the pace
of play.
Well,
I think to your point, Nick, that like, you know, it's sitting there in overtime. You know, with it, and I'm watching the Browns Cardinals game first quarter end, so it waged on. And I think if you watch the end of the game, you'd think differently about Kirk Cousins and the Vikings offense, which you're right was extremely frustrating. It went into a deep slumber for long stretches of this game. And Sam Darnold spent 3+ quarters convincing you that he's not going to be able to carry the Panthers through this season unless they get Christian McCaffrey back for the rest of the year when he comes back from his injury.
And I mean, the Vikings did put up uneven. 571.
Yeah, but it was nothing like that. Right. I mean, they had 16 unanswered points and stormed back, but they really looked troubled for a big chunk of this game.
Yeah, I think at one point on the Panthers side, Sam Darnold had as many completions overall as Adam Thielen had receptions. They both had 8.
He did, and Dan and I noticed that Darnold at one point was so off target that he overthrew a pass into the end zone area and grazed a woman, Dan. Well,
yes, an attractive one. Well, young woman took a shot to the arm.
But she wasn't really watching the game closely, and it surprised her.
And then, yeah, and Darnold kind of saved himself with a 96-yard drive there. They convert a 4th-and-forever from his own goal line and then march all the way down the field, get the 2-point conversion. So it kind of saves Darnold from a lot of criticism this week.
Still finishes 17-for-41 with a couple turnovers.
Right. So it's
terrible,
like,
interception.
For me right now, like, listen, nobody's breaking news here that Sam Darnold is not a guy that's going to be able to carry this team by himself, and which ties in, I think, and it connects to the Panthers botching the Christian McCaffrey situation here. There's no way around it that they know how important he is to the offense, so they kind of set things up in a way where they try to get him back maybe sooner. They didn't even put him on IR initially. Obviously, now there's a setback because now he's back on IR, or he finally heads to IR, and now he's back week 9 at the earliest. So now you're in a situation, Shooky, where you have Sam Darnold's going to be out there alone with Robbie Anderson, who he has very little chemistry with all of a sudden, and you need DJ Moore to step up week to week. it none of this really points in a great direction, especially when the league best, as it was set up to us going into this game, Panthers D, got shredded today by the Vikings.
I thought we were tossing those rankings out. No, this is this is an example of two defining traits of the David Tepper Panthers and really the Matt Rhule Panthers so far. It's one, they don't know how to manage Christian McCaffrey injuries. They didn't really manage it very well last year either, if you go back and think about that, when they probably should have shut him down in a lost season and toyed with it and toyed with it and toyed with it until the final few weeks. And also, they're hyper-aggressive because they thought, you know, they get out to this 3-0 start and they're like, we have to capitalize on this. We're going to make moves. You know, we're going to make trades and so on and so forth. And ultimately, what do you get? You get a team that still, its fate rests on the shoulders and on the arm of Sam Darnold, who does not have his best player because you can't manage his health effectively. And this is what you get. And I know they got to overtime and they almost won the game and they should be commended for fighting because they were down 11 in the fourth quarter. But man, I have a debate ongoing with a buddy. Which 3-0 team is for real or less real than the other one? And right now between the Broncos and the Panthers, I think the Panthers are losing that battle, and games like today kind of tell me that.
Yeah, I mean, I still look at the Panthers, we'll like the Panthers as a well-coached team. From the Vikings side real quick, because I know this drove Greg nuts, that I put Mike Zimmer in that Mike McCarthy category where this is not a cutting-edge time clock manager or sort of late-game decision guy, but also positive for the Vikings, KJ Osborne. I mean, you start to realize that this wide receiver group is dangerous. And to talk about the Vikings going to sleep, you're still getting moments from Kirk Cousins. And I know that probably the experience will end at some point with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. He's playing really well when things are going good for the Vikings.
He's great. Yeah. He's very good. And Osborne has won them a couple of these games with the plays that he is a legit number three. You have multiple chances to put the Panthers away late in the game, and Mike Zimmer's still coaching like he's coaching some elite defense, and that it's, you know, 2002 or something like that. All he had to do was call a couple passes and let Kirk Cousins win on first or second down on some of the last drives, and then you wouldn't have had to go to overtime. Sam Darnold only got a chance because Mike Zimmer's running on third and long. It's like, Let your best players make the plays, like Thielen, Jefferson, Cousins. Let them make the plays.
I do enjoy being back in the office just to hear Greg's temperature, I guess to see the Greg's temperature just rising throughout these games.
It's always these tough guy head coaches, too. Like,
right.
We're going to be really tough. And then they coach pretty scared. Like, they coach like they're afraid to lose. So that part I don't get.
Yeah, it's exactly that. You're exactly right. He's coaching not to lose. And the funny thing, too, is, you know, we talked about 571 yards of total offense and how it didn't look like that at all. Here's another stat for you that people won't realize when they talk about Kirk Cousins. He's thrown three or more touchdowns and zero interceptions in five of his last games. He has 11 such instances in which he's done that since 2020. Only one quarterback has done that more, Aaron Rodgers. And yet Kirk doesn't get the respect.
Kirk
and
cook.
I think sometimes he doesn't get the ball put in his hands to go do it.
It's going
to
happen again. Everyone's going to bury Kirk Cousins during a season, during the offseason. Then you'll look at his stats like, oh, what did he do last year? He was probably like 21 touchdowns, 23 picks, pass rating of 87. No, he's going to throw for 37 touchdowns and 12 interceptions and throw for 4,700 yards. And he is not the problem in Minnesota. Never has been. But he's a little annoying.
I think that's a huge
his coach doesn't
part of
like
it.
Him.
It's the persona.
His shove of Zimmer actually was like my favorite thing Kirk Cousins has maybe ever done.
Now
I'm all in on Kirk Cousins.
But yet
Cousins.
Highly awkward because he specializes in highly awkward.
Well, my favorite Kirk Cousins moment, other than his declaration that he would put himself in a plexiglass cube to protect himself from coronavirus instead of getting the coronavirus vaccine, was when he put up video of his own gender reveal. His wife was expecting, and his job was to throw a football and hit the target to reveal like blue or pink plume of
just
smoke.
Just to be clear, not his own gender reveal, the gender of
I think
child.
That's established, okay, yeah, okay. The child. And he basically missed the target with the ball. And they're like, let's throw it up live anyway. Let's put it up on the old gram.
How about a retake on that?
All right, Shooky, I know you told me you're in downtown Cleveland and there's some upset people outside the window, hopefully not climbing up to the window because some crazy, unfortunate stuff went down for your hometown Brownies on Sunday.
Straight drop back for Kyler. Steps up, lobs it back in the end zone. Wide open is Hopkins and a touchdown. Kyler stepping up again, finds DeAndre Hopkins, and that's a big score late in the third to make it 29-14.
Dave Pasch, KTAR, with the call. Kyler Murray's. Is it too soon, Greg, to talk about MVP marches? Because it's in full swagger mode. The Cardinals quarterback threw four more touchdown passes without a pick in a 37-14 win over a, let's just call it, an outclassed and beat up Browns team in Cleveland. Mark, watch us next to you. You had a foreboding vibe from the start. You didn't feel good about it. And if you take out a Hail Mary, this thing was almost an embarrassment for the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, but let's, you know, the Cardinals, a team that passes every test. I don't think that we understand how many challenges arise when you don't have your head coach going to the game, when essentially your head coach is the only play caller you have.
They apparently not that many.
Well, no, I mean, that's the thing. They completely made it look easy. And you have like Colt McCoy and Kyler Murray and a gaggle of coaches helping to call plays on the sideline. And they completely outclassed Cleveland to the point where in the middle, you know, at halftime, I'm thinking, do I need to give a Super Bowl ticket to Jason Zumwalt, our voiceover friend, our friend and our Cardinals fan, our resident Cardinals fan here, because they look that like that kind of team to me right now.
Kind of depends what kind of text he sent you today. Was he nice about
delightful.
It afterwards?
Okay, delightful. Good. He's a classy guy, too. But, you know, Shook and I texted a little bit during this, too. And, you know, this reminded me of the 2019 Browns, because you remove both tackles, right and left tackle, not in this game. And you had Baker running for his life, and it led to two killer strip sacks. He had a bad interception in this game. It reminded me of old chaotic times where everything that we've seen and observed over Kevin Stefanski, that structure was missing today, and the floor fell out. And you're playing a team that I think, you know, from a Cardinals side, DeAndre Hopkins, three touchdowns, one where he was all alone in the end zone, total breakdown. They find a way to completely overwhelm defenses. And in this case, I mean, I you know, you guys got a little annoyed at me because it was like 5 minutes into the game and I just said, this thing is over. But Browns fans understand. And I think if you're
Well, you say that every Browns game for any time they get off to a slow start.
I really haven't said that in a long, long time.
It was scoreless. And you said they are going to get dropped today. And you were right. You were right today.
A lot of it has to do with the Cardinals and who they are. They're so aggressive. They're so resilient. When they make a mistake, they don't care. They keep pressing. And today, I think they basically said, forget the Cleveland Browns. We're the team you need to be talking about.
Yeah, I mean, Mark had great reason to feel that way because they just played an aggressive offense the week prior and got 47 hung on them. And they were about as banged up going into this game this week. So there was no reason to feel otherwise or expect anything else. So for this to be the product, I was actually surprised.
Come on. Both you Browns fans, don't act like now that you were some
type
of underdog.
They were favored in this
underdog.
Game. Everyone picked them
Greg
in this
keeps,
game.
I could care less
you're
who
in your building.
Favored. That's absurd.
No, you're in your no, building. Greg. You have a not great, true. You have a great group of playmakers. I mean, let's not say like the little old Browns have no chance in this game. They got whooped in their building, and then sometimes you just get beat up.
Well, no, not everybody picked them because I didn't pick them. I picked the Cardinals. I don't know how they were possibly favored. You don't have
you.
Nick Chubb going into this game. You didn't have Jarvis Landry. Yes, that's right. I will stand on this. They didn't have Jarvis Landry. They didn't have both their tackles. Their center was questionable until the game today. You know, he went into the weekend questionable. You had a number of injuries and guys kind of coming back from injury on the defensive side of the football.
The Cardinals didn't have Chandler Jones or their head coach.
They did. Or Rodney Hudson, yeah.
And then they had Kyler Murray, and they had all of their top receivers. They had DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk, A.J. Green, all who victimized the Browns as expected. James Conner had probably his best day as a Cardinal today.
You look good.
Everything that happened was what I expected. What I didn't expect is that the Browns would fall apart even more than they did. Baker hanging onto the ball too long, getting strip sacked twice, re-injuring his shoulder. The interception was horrible, but I come to expect that from him every once in a while. That's just who he is. And then you have the most negative part of the game, which is losing Kareem Hunt to a non-contact calf injury, which everyone was like, oh, it's not Achilles. We're really optimistic. That's great news.
You look pretty banged up there.
Optimistic feels like a stretch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they play Thursday, and so we have no idea what sort of shape they'll be in. And they're 3-3.
Bad timing for the Thursday night game. Baker, by the way, after the game, his arm's in a sling, and he re-aggravated the injury on a hit from J.J. Watt where he kind of got driven into the ground awkwardly right on that bad left shoulder. After the game, he said, when asked about how he was feeling, he said, feels like shit. So he's pretty straightforward, but he wants to play, and Baker is a badass. He's a tough dude. But the short turnaround here makes you think that Case Keenum's in play for Week 7.
Maybe. I mean, he came back and played in this game. I think it's going to be a pain management thing because the nature of those injuries, and I am no doctor, but I have suffered, and I'm not a quarterback either, but I have suffered torn labrums before. It can't really get that much worse, and it's his non-throwing shoulder, so I think he could be able to manage it. I wasn't surprised to see him come back in the game. That's also kind of the guy he is. But you're right, the short week, I think that they've got a long road ahead of them unless they can get healthy in a relatively quick fashion, which, you know, you leave that up to medicine. It's not like you're just trying to bounce back from something. But I do want to say this. We've had some listeners in the last couple of weeks give us some crap for not giving the Cardinals enough credit. So I'm going to give them their flowers. They dominated this game. I don't think this was their statement win of the year. That was the Rams win because of all the guys the Browns.
How about the Titans? They have three of the best victories that any team has had all year. All three are on the road. All three were blowouts. Week one was such a stunner. I know it's the Titans, but the Titans were a playoff team, and that was huge. They destroyed the Rams, and they destroyed the Browns. They have to be, their coaching staff has to be given a lot of credit, like this offensive line especially, which doesn't look great on paper, always protects very well, and they're getting the job done. It's crazy.
It helps when you're protecting Kyler Murray, too. And I think they're just playing great football right now. Now, you could say they got the benefit of, I think there were six penalties and seven plays in one drive, but that was not the course of this game. They dominated this game, and I'll feel very confident picking them going forward no matter who they're playing. I mean, they look like the best team in the league right now.
I do wonder if you're Cliff Kingsbury or any coach where suddenly you're home on your couch and the team dominates, it's like, wait a minute, how do we need you? Are you important? I mean, he is important.
Just stay home. Stay in that mansion.
When we missed you in London, but did you sense some of that when we were thriving in London and you were
do you know me at all? I spent the whole time thinking like I'm getting replaced by every other guy in the studio on every show, so this is troubling to some degree.
No, we weren't the same.
Working at CVS
Mark.
3 weeks from now.
All right, Chucky, are you in danger, by the way? Because unruly Cleveland fans, that sounds dangerous potentially. You're a big man. You could fend for yourself though.
Well, okay. So you said I hope they don't climb up through the window. I mean, I'm not penthouse here. We're low level, but you got to be Spider-Man to get up here because this is a very tall building. So we're okay there.
Okay.
Having said that, I'm still within earshot. And I went to go make a pot of coffee right before Sunday Night Football kicked off. And all I heard was people shouting and laying on the horns to get out of the traffic jam. And one guy just goes to the corner of the street. I happen to be looking out there. He just looks up to the sky, the night sky in Cleveland, and goes, "I hate the Browns."
Oh, we're back there again.
This is good.
If anything,
we need to send you down there and do some on the street reporting in the future. It's like, you know, war combat reporting.
Or so how about this? You have a pot of hot coffee you can throw out the window. Secondly, imagine being like a wayward Browns fan who climbs up a wall and breaks into someone's apartment, and it's Nick Shook standing there. I think that would be a
your day
Ill
just
move,
got worse. So. And that's, you know, there's real fans in the Midwest and in Western Ohio, anywhere in Ohio. What?
I mean, Mark kind of just suggested maybe just this guy just pour some scalding coffee on him just for yelling.
If things get that ugly, you have hot coffee at your side.
I was just saying that I assume that fan was returning from the game. Sometimes you sleep on, like, when you go to a game and you pay the hundreds of dollars for the ticket and the $80 for parking and then the concessions.
And you get waxed.
And then your team gets waxed and you're miserable for 4 hours in the building and then you're in traffic. You might react to the heavens as well.
It's one of the more underrated things about live sports is that it's so much worse to be there live. Like, I ultimately
I don't know.
In a heartbreaking circumstance like that, you would have rather been at home. And the money's part of it, too, because you're thinking, I just spent $500 to feel like I got kicked in the nuts.
Conversely, if you're at a truly special live event, it's something it stays with you forever, and you can't put a price on that. All right, Chucky, we love you, baby.
I will say, that's how I spent most Sundays of my childhood. I was fortunate enough that my family had season tickets to the Browns for many years.
Right. This is not alien territory for you.
A lot of sad car rides home.
Oh, no talking. Dad's not talking. The boys know to be quiet. All right, there he goes. Nick Shook. Thank you, buddy. All right, let's move on. The Cardinals are the only undefeated team in football. Through 3 weeks, the Raiders and Broncos were also undefeated. Things went sideways for both teams, especially in the case of the Raiders. But things took a turn for the better on Sunday.
Carr takes a snap. Lobs it down toward, caught by Edwards, he's free, 35-30-25, pushed out of bounds at the 20-yard line. Edwards broke free and Derek Carr lobbed it to him down the near sideline.
That was the play of the game. Brian Edwards down the sideline in the fourth quarter. Beautifully thrown ball by Derek Carr. The third down conversion salted away a really big victory for the Raiders, who go to Mile High and lay a 34-24 win, hand a 34-24 loss, I should say, to their rivals. In a game, Greg, that obviously with the background, John Gruden's stunning resignation and the taking over, the special teams coach takes over, and you wonder which way this is going to go. Well, it went the Raiders' way in a big way on Sunday.
The Fighting Bisaccias, watch out. I mean, they looked like a team that felt a little free, you know?
Oh, here we go.
This is
old
this,
narrative
this
ball.
This is Greg's story.
I'm just having a little fun with it. Hey, you get rid of this guy who was the domineering personality,
and
you come out for this first week, and you play free, you play aggressive.
What about when they were 3-0? Was his domineering attitude a problem then?
They didn't play a game
then?
This good. They didn't play a game this complete. I'm not saying...
Don't make me defend John Gruden.
I'm not saying he's a problem or a solution. All I'm saying is they showed up and they played excellent football on both sides of the ball. Derek Carr's been great all season. And I do think part of this was a matchup advantage for the Raiders that they probably would have won this game anyways, because I think their biggest problem right now is their offensive line, and the Broncos just don't have a pass rush. They could not hurt the Raiders' biggest weakness, which is up front. And if you give Derek Carr a little bit of time, he's going to spin some magic. He only threw 27 passes to get to 341. He has been awesome this year, and his receivers, Ruggs, Edwards, Waller, even Drake made a great play. The running back all made great catches on some really pretty throws. And just goes to show, like, you can have a great secondary, and I think the Broncos have a very good secondary. It's not going to matter unless you get some pressure up front. And on the flip side, like, the Raiders destroyed Teddy Bridgewater. Like, he was shook by the end of this game. They hit him early, often, almost every time he went back. And that Raiders pass rush we saw in week one was all the way back. Max Crosby played about as well as you can play a game today, and they took it to him. There was some garbage time sprinkling on here, but the Raiders could have won this game by even more.
The Teddy interceptions, were these on him or not? There are three of them.
One was with 12 seconds left. One was terrible. Really, the first two were absolutely on him. One was kind of you just threw it up at a certain point in the game where you almost felt like the decision was justified because they weren't doing anything, and he throws up a jump ball and gets picked off. The first one was on a fourth down, bad throw. He didn't play great. They had penalties in key spots. They had drops in key spots. But I felt like at least the way these two teams were constituted today, they could have played this game 10 times and it wouldn't have mattered. Every phase of the Raiders was superior to what the Broncos put out there.
Teddy also missed what should be a layup touchdown to Cortland
Sutton.
That was
a big play in this game.
Down the left sideline. He was wide open. He had his defender beat by four steps and he overshot him. But I'm not. There's no need to pile on Teddy Bridgewater. But I think we all know
it was probably his worst game. Though I will say.
I mean, his stats don't really tell the story because he did end up going over 300 with three touchdowns. But he was, he's Teddy Bridgewater, and that's just who he is. And if he doesn't have the right setup around him, it's not going to happen for the Broncos. And for the Broncos, the whole idea, Greg, and I know injuries have played a role with this team as well. The whole idea was that the defense was going to be nasty, and Von Miller. This is a disappearing act for Von Miller in this game, not to put all the loss on any one player, not Teddy, not Von, but when you need somebody to make a big play and you're talking about where is the Broncos pass rush, well, Von Miller is a guy that you need to step up in a game like this, and he was not a big presence.
That's absolutely right, and I think he's played pretty well for the most part this year, but when you only have one pass rusher, it just makes it easier to stop that one pass rusher. They're very injured at the second level, too. Their linebackers are getting smoked. They're getting pushed around. Even the Raiders could even run the ball a little bit. The play calling I thought was good from Greg Olson. It's a new play caller, and some big time Raiders, backers who watch this were noticing some different variations to what they were doing. Creativity, some plays down the field, but it's also just the players. Ruggs is turning into a really good player. Mm-hmm. Carr's having the best season in my mind of his career so far.
I love seeing this for the Raiders. Looking at the long receptions, Ruggs 48, Edwards 51. They have a 33-yarder, a 31-yarder, 25, 29. I mean, just go be that offense. Just go throw the ball down the field. And you know, throw caution to the wind. Bisaccia, it's the Bisaccia era. I'm not into it the way you are, Greg. I mean,
I'm not.
We heard.
I just am having fun
about it,
because Dan is annoyed that I think that I was.
It's on my radar a little bit.
I gave Spice Rack some love on the show.
It's
I thought it was amazing. Spice Rack basically had an idea to fade, you know, to go against the racial controversy a week
ago. Desert-wise, yes.
And it worked. And then this week, he felt just as strong that the Raiders are going to walk in this game because his big theory, when you get the interim coach, you get one great game like this.
Right.
And you know, to be
fair,
that
was spot on. That was great.
It was right. And Andrew Hawkins, a former player who's been around some fired bad coaches, he said the exact same thing. He said that first game, you're so excited. He picked the Raiders because of it, too. It seems silly, but I don't know.
And the difference is, too, is that typically the interim coach comes in to take an absolute disaster, a ship sinking, you know, for 4 or 5 weeks. This is a better team and a better run.
It's an okay team.
That's the point I wanted to make, because I don't want this to get painted as like Dan's defending John Gruden, because no one's defending John Gruden right now. But
it is
interesting, though,
that you don't think he should have been fired.
I mean, you could paint it that way.
Just email. No, they obviously he got his just desserts, if that's the right way to put it. He deserves everything that happened to him. But some of the recency bias in the analysis immediately following the resignation was like, John Gruden was a terrible coach and a terrible team builder, and this team is bad. It was bad when he got here and it bad when he left. Well, yeah, because they had lost back-to-back games to the Chargers and Bears. But this is also a team that won 3 games to start the season. Now we get another big performance. All I'm saying is that, first of all, I'm team Bisacci. I'm on the Bisacci army
Sure, of course. No one's questioning
I'm front
that.
Lines on that. But it wasn't like when Gruden left that this Raiders team was in total disarray. There are pieces in place here for this team to continue on a trajectory toward the playoffs, and it's not over just because Gruden's gone.
I agree, and I think, look, Gruden's been there 4 years. He's way under 500 in those 4 years, but I think this is the best Raiders team he's had.
That's all I'm kind of saying. It's not just you. There's a lot of the analysis for me,
I think their defensive line is a thing, and they've never had anything on defense, and it really is a thing.
My point is that after the firing, it was like Gruden was a terrible hire, and look where the Raiders are now. It's like, all right, if you only paid attention to football in the last 14 days, you would say the Raiders are a total mess right now, but this team has a chance to do something still this season. I thought this performance wakes everyone up to that the Raiders aren't dead, even if John Gruden's career is.
And that Broncos 3-0 start that Shook mentioned, they beat the Giants, the Jaguars, and the Jets.
They beat it so convincingly.
That's fine, but this is – well, no, they never scored more than 27 points in any of those games.
And
so
My favorite story during the broadcast – I don't know if they were talking about Teddy or it was this tight end Sauber about how he does not have TV at home, so he didn't know Gruden had been fired until the whole next day. I was like, well, he doesn't have internet either? He's never watched TV. He's like, he's there all day, and then he gets home and that's it. I was like, okay.
I think this is something you said as well, Greg, when I was pushing back on the Broncos, as I often do, as Broncos fans get mad about that. And I was talking about their schedule, and you're like, well, good teams beat up on bad teams. That's what good teams do. No, actually, good teams beat good teams, and they win those games. Beating bad teams is okay, whatever. You got to beat some good teams, and we have not seen Denver do that yet this season.
Their strengths aren't their strengths. Now, a lot of it is injuries. You know, losing 6 or 7 starters, they were not a team that could deal with that. But some of their strengths in the secondary, we thought they were going to be great. That feels a little overrated right now, and certainly the depth of their skill positions have been diminished to a point where, you know, the Browns have to be very excited that the Broncos are the team they're playing on Thursday. We'll get to previewing
that game. But the Broncos could be equally excited.
Right. I just mean that could be a get-right game. For one of those teams, it absolutely will be.
All right, let's take a break, and then we will continue on.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
They've got fourth and one from the Giants three. From a bunch to the right, here comes Robert Wood. They fake the handoff his way. Roll right, throw right to the pylon. Cooper Kupp, he's got it! Touchdown, L.A.!
JB along with the call for KSPN. You know, Maurice Jones-Drew, MJD, our buddy, he was in London. He was still in London this week. So what, he tells the Rams, I'll see you in a couple weeks? And JB just sits in that booth by himself, like Vince Scully. We'll have to do some digging on this one. MJD's kind of got a good setup.
It's a great move by MJD.
Matthew Stafford threw three of his four touchdown passes in a 28-point second quarter for the Rams, including that connection to Cooper Kupp, who continues to be otherworldly this season. The Rams cruise to a 38-11 win over the GM at the Meadowlands. Mark, sounds like this one went the way everyone pretty much expected. Healthy, good team beats up on injury-decimated bad one.
Precisely. A total butt-womping. The kind of game where, you know, we're covering these things. And
did you write down butt-womping?
Total butt-womping is how I describe the game to myself. It was a tough watch.
He did write it.
That's how I felt.
Is whomping W-H-O-M-P?
W-H-O-M-P-I-N-G.
Amazing. And it's highlighted. And he also, can I say, he also wrote, traveled 3,000 miles to drop a dirty bomb on the G-man.
Well, you know,
I love
because
this.
It's constant.
I love
it's,
those
we're
notes.
Always talking about these. Now, the Chargers are an example. You West Coast team that goes east, it's these stats they're sleeping through it. The Rams said, forget that narrative. And
have you seen how these guys fly to games now? It's not 1974 anymore.
Exactly.
They're not taking the plane with the propellers on the side.
No, you're not bagging steerage with like pets and bags.
Right. If they can ask Trent Green to overcome jet lag to announce a game, I think the Rams will be fine traveling like 4 hours. In a private plane.
It's very true. I mean, the jet lag team looked to be the Giants. And this was, you know, Daniel Jones had two turnovers coming into this game. And there were a lot of reasons to look at Daniel Jones and say, maybe he's finally rounding into shape. Today was a disaster. Strip sacked, picked, both led, four turnovers led to 21 points for the Rams. And Stafford, whose finger was hurt two Thursdays ago, looked clean throwing the ball. And you mentioned Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp, this is from Rams PR, in the last 35 years, here are the list of players with 600 yards receiving and 7 touchdowns through week 6.
Oh, dang.
Cooper Kupp in 2021, and in 2007, Randy Moss. That's the list.
Listen, that is such an interesting stat because we all love Cooper Kupp. He's been an impact player for them since he came into the league. I think he was a second-round pick. But the fact that he's taken his game, and he had a reconstructive knee surgery in the mix here as well. He's taken his game to this level. I don't think anybody saw this coming. Like that he's like at a rich man's Adam Thielen level, not to go apples to apples in
I'm
terms
really
of the way
into
he looks.
But someone called him Steve Smith, and ever since then I've been watching him as if he's Steve Smith. He's a little bigger than Steve Smith, and I'm like, I can see that.
That's interesting.
Peak Steve Smith. I got to give Daniel Jeremiah credit. I mean, he kind of was in on this Kupp thing like before the draft
right,
even. He
said he's scrub gonna this out
well,
of the
he's
show.
He's doing
Raver.
His job if he was correct. That's what his job is.
They are 5-1. The top of the NFC is like really good. I mean, that's a very basic comment, but like Cowboys,
no,
Packers,
you nailed the analysis.
Bucks, Cardinals, Rams are all 5-1 or better, and they all have to feel like well, we could win the Super Bowl this year. Of course they all feel like that. And they've all – it's going to be a big, you know, tough race, especially in that division. One of those teams is going to have play three road games between the Cardinals and Rams at this point. It feels like a two-team race.
I will tell you, you know, Dan, we grew up watching these G-men back in the day, and there wasn't a lot of this back in the 80s and early 90s, but you could audibly hear – the Giants fans having a bad time at this game.
Oh,
it was rough. We do have a little bit of breaking news, though.
Oh wow. Really putting Graver in that.
Graver is like, Graver, you're working overtime.
Just want to let you know, 38-11, the final score is a scoregami. It is the 1,067th or unique final score in NFL history. I know that categorizes breaking news on this show, I'm assuming.
The only thing I hate more than scoregami is win probability percentage.
What is the problem with it?
Or unnecessary use of breaking news. It's a nice
tidbit. Well, you specialize in that
from
what I recall.
It's not breaking news. You got the news hours ago.
Well, you didn't know that. You didn't know that
I
news.
I did because for some reason Ely sent it to me.
Well, also because you just spent 3 minutes looking at my
Stop
screen.
Fighting, boys.
So.
You know, exactly. I've been living out here in Los Angeles for 11 years now, but I'm always, in my heart, I'm a New Yorker. And it's been a tough, tough ride for New York sports for the past decade or so. And Giants fans, you know, you turn to football as something to fall back on after the baseball season turns flat. And then the Giants are dead and buried by the middle of October. And that's exactly where they are. There's no coming back for the Giants from this. So now it's Knicks season. And the Knicks are undefeated in the preseason. And maybe that turns out
maybe
better.
You get excited that the NFC wild card, like the seventh spot.
The New York City Ballet.
It's tough. Kadarius Toney was the one reason to be excited about this team, and he goes out with an injury early in this game, and that just feels so typical.
And he had
this season.
Three catches for like 36 yards in the first couple minutes, then he was out. So,
All right, we can't make you wait any longer, and we thank you, fans, for your patience. Here is the Texans Colts analysis.
First and 10, Wentz outside zone, and big hole, Taylor, 20, 25, 30 down the far sideline, tiptoeing, he's at the 50, he's at the 40, cuts back, now he's at the 30, the 20, the 10, and he's finally dragged down inside the 10, he'll be dropped at the 4-yard line. What a run, Jonathan Taylor, the biggest gallop all day, first and goal for the Colts.
I was tasting those curly fries.
Wow.
I don't know. Okay. I don't want the context.
Now put that in the vault for best calls of the year. Just the curly fries alone.
That was Rick Venturi, I think, with the curly fry comment with Matt Taylor of WFNI. Oh, yeah, Jonathan Taylor, he's on a roll now. The running back set up a touchdown with that 83-yard burst. He scored two more touchdowns of his own. And a 31-3 romp by the Colts over the Texans. Carson Wentz also threw two touchdowns for Indy, who bounced back beautifully from the savagery of their Monday night meltdown to the Ravens 6 days earlier. Greg, life in the AFC South is good in how it provides these soft landings in this game.
It's true. By the Tuesday, the Colts could be only one game back of the Titans if the Bills can win that Monday nighter. And I like that we saw with the Colts a little bit of identity here, which we have not seen, which was explosive plays. Paris Campbell catches a 51-yard touchdown on a really nice throw by Wentz. Then Paris Campbell goes out with an injury, so you kind of got the ultimate Paris Campbell performance. But you also got 52 yards on a catch from T.Y. Hilton, who was playing his first game of the year. And you had that explosive Taylor play, and you had some explosive defensive plays. It didn't feel like this game was 31-3. They were very even in yardage. The Texans actually had more first downs, but the Colts were in control, and their defense has really shown up. I know they didn't finish out that Ravens game, but they've really shown up the last seven, you know, for the most part, the last three games when they didn't at all in the first month of the season, and that gives them some hope that at least we can crawl back, and Carson Wentz keeps getting better every week, really.
I was going to ask, why does Jonathan Taylor, who's playing the way he is, have only 14 carries? I mean, 145 yards.
You know, because he was like 6 for 8 before that 83-yard in the third quarter. They were not running the ball very well until
that. Well, and Wentz had 20 attempts. They had 48 offensive plays. That's less than the Patriots did in that abnormal game. And I mean,
it's a very strange game.
But Davis Mills, I look at the New England game now, and I'm wondering, was that just a total? I mean, obviously that, you know, he's got a lot to work on, but that seems like it stands out as a total aberration because he came crashing back to earth.
More or less. He made a couple throws on the move that you didn't hate, but ultimately they scored 3 points against the Colts.
He's kind of a tough comp in general, because not only is he not like a premium draft pick quarterback, he's also playing on like one of the most talent poor rosters.
Right.
In the
they actually put up 350 yards. They go 9-17 on he made a couple plays, but it's
I know you're looking at Barry Davis Mills, Mark. Your analysis on Thursday pointed to that.
No. I mean what I wrote last week for our website was completely opposite. I mean he does have Brandon Cooks, who is quietly having a pretty awesome season.
They do keep score, though, and it was 31-3 at the end of the game. So that doesn't reflect too well. It doesn't reflect too well on the quarterback that I think in three of the four games they've been in single digits. So that's problematic.
By the way, the quarterback that used to be their quarterback, Deshaun Watson, who's still on the team, some of these teams that have been connected to Deshaun Watson are not having great seasons with their respective quarterbacks. That continues to kind of lurk on the periphery. Houston has lost 5 straight overall, 6 of their last 7 against the Colts. That is that. Let's move on to Detroit, where the Bengals look to build some momentum.
Receiver goes in jet motion. Burrow rolls to the right.
Open.
He throws. It's caught. Mixon streaking down the sideline to the 20. Gets a block from Chase and runs it into the end zone. What a call. What a block. Touchdown, Cincinnati.
Oh, they're having fun now. Dan Hort and Dave Lapham, WCKY. Joe Burrow tied a career high with 3 touchdown passes, leading the Bengals to an easy 34-11 win over the still winless Detroit Lions at Ford Field. Greg, the Bengals have already equaled last year's win total. You drinking that orange juice?
Yes, because of the defense.
Because they're orange, their color.
I get it. It's good.
That's like, well done.
That was good. They have a lot of juice. Juice was the right word.
Yes.
There is something, and this is why maybe you don't invest in defense, because it's so unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something indefinable when a defense has juice. It's just like hustle and energy week after week, whether you're winning, whether you're losing. This Bengals defense has juice, and they squeeze the life out of this Lions offense.
I didn't think I was going to get this amount of run.
It's true,
from the
though.
Juice setup. I love it.
It really is true, and they've had it all 6 weeks, and that keeps them in tough games, and it helps them win a game like this easy, where the offense took a while to get going. But you know what? Eventually it did get going, and you blew them out.
I mean, the Bengals' defensive coordinator is, you know, absorbed probably 25 to 30 poison arrows from this
show
in the past.
Lou Anarumo. Yeah. We love a Lou Anarumo.
Captain Lou.
Way to stick with him. You know, the easy thing would have been to just fire him with us.
Sure, when he was not performing.
Wait, what about Zach Taylor? You want to talk about a guy who's taking some slings of arrows on this podcast?
I'm not ready to give him too much
credit. Well, I think
credit.
It's like
these
when someone is not doing their job for 3 or 4 years in a row, you stick with them. That's the lesson here.
3 or 4 is...
What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying there are people out there doing that.
This is year 3 for Zach Taylor, I believe. Yeah, and they won 1 or 2 games this first year. They won 4 games last year. So we talked about it. He was on the hot seat. They needed to show something. I don't know, man. Again, sometimes I feel like when we talk about head coaches, if we decide we like them, we give them credit. And if we decide we don't really like them, we give credit
their
to the coordinators.
Their players are good. Let's give Joe Burrow credit. And Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Mixon.
I'm just saying it's just,
Trey,
you know,
Hendrickson.
Yeah, you know, pick and choose which coaches are doing a good job. Sometimes that's on my radar in this room.
Well, we
because
were wrong
you can
about
evaluate.
Zach Taylor.
You can
no, I'm just saying,
things.
Like, if you're going to kill Zach Taylor for the team making no progress in the first 2 years, when the team makes progress, you know, it's maybe not fair
They're
to Zach Taylor
fine.
To not give him credit.
I still watch their offense, and I do want more. I think they can be better. I kind of think they will be better. And this game was a good example of it. They really were held in check for much of it until that Mixon screen pass where it was a blown coverage. But then Ja'Marr Chase had one of the defining plays of his rookie season with an awesome block running down the field, and Mixon's going crazy. And he's just pointing to that's Ja'Marr's touchdown. That's Ja'Marr's touchdown. And then Ja'Marr does the Ja'Marr Chase thing where he gets a 53-yard catch too in the game. He gets – it just week after week, he does something special that really makes you think they have something really good.
They're a fun story this year. You wish that kicked in and hit the upright last week, because then the Bengals would be flying high at 5-1. But 4-2 puts them in second place in the AFC North, and I think that's one of the biggest surprises of the young season. One last note on the Lions. Yes, the NFL's only winless team now, because we'll talk about the Jaguars later. They've now lost 10 straight going back to last season. That is now the league's longest active losing streak. And Dan Campbell, who's, you know, relentlessly positive, loves his guys, believes in his team, he couldn't help but be a little bit critical of Jared Goff after the game. Let's just listen in on that.
Yeah, look, I think I will say this. I still don't feel like we can accurately judge him one way or another. I don't feel that way yet. Now, I will say this.
Should I say it?
I feel like he needs to step up more than he has. And I think he needs to help us, you know, just like everybody else. And
let me check this depth.
I think he's gonna need to put a little bit of weight on his shoulders here, and it's time to step up, make some throws, and do some things.
Well, the pause was devastating.
That's it.
But he needs help.
I thought that the Gravedigger – is he still talking? I thought the Gravedigger had just hit pause for effect there, which would have been a classic Gravedigger move. Get that Gravedigger drop in there. You got to build a brand, Graver.
You're right.
I'm giving you a brand on a plate. Take it.
I appreciate it.
You're talking
it.
To a brand coach here. I can promise you that.
But I look – and this is good news for you, Mark, because you know who's number two on the step chart. As the – well, you don't. The president of the Blauhard Association.
What do you mean I don't? I do.
Oh, you kind of were giving me a blank look when I was trying to set you up there.
I mean, I'm running the fan club into year – I'm in year three or four of the fan club here.
Tough days.
That's what I'm saying. I set you up. I thought you were going to take it and run
tough
there.
Tough days for the Blauhard.
Here's the thing. Goff is 0-13 with every coach not named Sean McVay.
He's played pretty well this
year. He's been fine, but well, the Lions
What's up with Campbell?
Today was not. Yeah. He did not play well.
Well, they had
today.
61 yards in the first half, and the reason they did is because of all of them. It's not just Jared Goff. I mean, he's been a little spicier than expected.
It's because of that juice that the Bengals have. But he missed some open throws.
I'm a little surprised. Though, because he measured those thoughts as much as I've ever heard a coach measure a thought before saying it.
But he's not. There's no phony. I like that he's not just dropping phony lines, because that was real raw emotion.
Goff like a Dan Campbell type of guy? Ultimately, is he a kneecap biter? Is Dan Campbell ultimately feeling like he wants to go to war
Campbell,
with Jared Goff?
These guys,
of course,
for one
and
year.
People acting right. Like with the Gruden controversy. We're stunned to learn that the NFL is so chummy behind the scenes. All these guys know each other all across the league.
What are you talking about specifically here?
What do you mean?
The chummy part.
Well, I don't mean chumminess like the way Gruden was being chummy on email, but just they all know each other, and they're all, when you see these guys at league events, you're like, oh, I didn't know those guys knew each other. I'm not saying that Dan Campbell knows Sean McVay, but I'm not saying there's not a possibility that Dan Campbell sent Sean McVay a text tonight like, oh, this guy sucks.
Well, or that their GM came from the Rams. I mean, like, yeah, they all knew who Goff was.
All right, let's take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Three receivers left. Quick count. Rodgers takes. Pump fakes once and again. Scrambles to his right. Buying time. Takes it himself. He's to the five, to the end zone for the touchdown. Aaron Rodgers just inside the pylon. And the Packers lead it 23-14.
Wayne Larrivee with the call. WTMJ. Aaron Rodgers threw for two touchdowns. Ran for another score. We'll get to that in 1 second. He led the way for the Packers in a 24-14 win over the Bears. The Packers have now won five straight after that week one setback against the Saints in Jacksonville, which feels like it was a million years ago. And as for Aaron Rodgers, it was more mastery over the Bears. The Packers beat them for the 20th time in 23 games, counting the playoffs. They improved to 22-5 with Rodgers as the starter against Chicago. And after that clinching score that we just played, Rodgers was very vocal with the fans at Soldier Field. And Gravedigger, I believe we have that.
Right on cue, Joe.
I still own you. I still own you to the Bears. Mark, I know you're very... You're not a big Aaron Rodgers guy. Where'd you come down on this latest?
Well, it's factual. So let's give him that. But he spent days before this game waxing poetic about how much Chicago meant to him. How he spent days in the past. There was a night he walked down the Chicago streets and met a mother and the son and took photos with them and walked for blocks. And the son tweeted his photo is Aaron Rodgers. So that child's thinking.
Well, I'd love Chicago if I was Aaron Rodgers. So many great
course,
memories.
But if you're that child, you're thinking, what's happened here? This guy now has just told my city to go take a dirt nap.
That's sports. I love that. I love
That's
it.
Good.
Maybe he even knows it might be his last time there as a member of the Packers. It has to be sweet. He was going up against a great defense, or very good defense at least.
Yeah, this was a nice performance by the Packers. The Bears, we talked about it. Their defense has gotten better and better. It's been solid this season, and Green Bay wasn't just going to walk over them, and they didn't. This was a battle, and Justin Fields, unfortunately for the Bears, was not able to really get anything going in this game. He was at, I believe, early in the fourth quarter, he was at 99 yards passing, and that's going to continue to be an issue for Chicago. The offense's inability to put together drives and keep up with the team that has a big offense, because what happened in this game was Chicago's D was game. They battled back and forth, but you can only do that for so long before a good offense gets the better of you, and that's eventually what happened, and that's the Rodgers scramble that effectively ended this game.
Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, there were years under Rodgers where they didn't really have a good run game, and I this is right now with Kareem Hunt out of the mix in Cleveland is, I would say, the second best running back tandem in the league other than maybe Zeke and Pollard, or you could argue these two are.
Dillon's good. Another Gutekunst pick that everyone hammered. And he adds something to their team. I've been focused on kind of what the Packers don't have, but what they do have, you're right. Like, they have a good running game, and they have a defense that's ultimately gotten a little better throughout the course of the season, and they have some potential to get better and get some more players back. So maybe they don't need to be a lights-out offense. It feels like a slightly underwhelming 5-1, but it's 5-1.
And it should be said that the Bears made this a game. This is, Rodgers... that touchdown scramble came after Justin Fields connected with Darnell Mooney on a 5-yard touchdown pass, cut the lead to 3 with 8.5 minutes to play. But as you see, it happened with Tampa Bay on Thursday night. These teams that are just a cut above, even if you get close to them.
Even Dallas today.
Dallas today, they will say, okay, that's cute. I mean, we're pawing with you a little bit. We're going to go finish this thing off, and that's what they did.
Again, this show is so heavily based on self-branding, self-promotion. Hit it. That's just another lock. I think that's 4 in a row.
I was trying to make a football analysis point, and I see Mark really edgy in the corner of my eye, looking and pointing at Gravedigger.
This is all that matters.
And I'm like, what? Maybe he's got some breaking news here. Maybe he's got something hot to add.
This is breaking news.
40% of the show.
You were 40% of the show self-promotion.
We spent 4 minutes discussing Dan's lock at the top of the show.
I got a lock one too. I didn't even mention it.
I know, but Dan and I are tied atop
trenchant. I'm trying to bury the lock. So
I should have reminded Dan, Greg locked the Chiefs. So
oh, well,
a lesser achievement.
Yeah. Very brave. All right. Any other thoughts on this game? Anybody kind of what you expected from this ball game? So let's move on. I still own you. That's pretty hardcore.
Great.
It's pretty hardcore. I like it.
I would love to yell that at a crowd of fans. How great would that feel? I own you.
And here you go, a 53-yarder. He kicked a 54-yarder a minute ago. Can Matthew Wright win the game for the Jaguars?
That was brilliant.
Cook puts it down. Wright kicks it up. The 53-yarder is good, good, good. Wright has made it. The Jaguars have won it on a 53-yard field goal by Matthew Wright. What a magnificent ending in London.
Holy cow.
Wow!
399 days ago was the last Jaguars win.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, that calls for the bongos. WOKV, great call from Frank Frangie. Jeff Lagerman, the old pass rushing specialist for Gangrene. Tony Vaselli in that booth as well, maybe. Anyway, Matthew Wright's 53-yard field goal, his time expired, gave the London Jacksonville Jaguars a 23-20 victory over the Dolphins at the Big Tot, the Hot Toddy, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. Wright playing just his third game for the Jags. Also drilled a clutch 54-yarder to tie the game at 20 with less than 4 minutes to play. And it is a game, a win mark for the Jaguars that snaps a 20-game losing streak. While at the same time, I think it sinks the Brian Flores era in Miami to its lowest point.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Washington, they're the most disappointing team in the league. I would not have been surprised if someone told me back in August they'd be 5-1. 1-5, the floor has fallen out to some degree. I know, listen, Tua had a good game, and I actually forgot about the London game last night and woke up midway through the second quarter of this, which is an unpleasant way to start your workday, to find out you're already
not
behind.
The best, yeah.
But Tua, everyone was going nuts over Tua's start. But I thought it was a really good day for Trevor Lawrence, who maybe outside of that Bengals game, this was his finest showing. And you could kind of see it with their offense at times. That, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the whole Urban Meyer thing. I found Urban Meyer slightly annoying celebrating this game at the end. I don't know what it is.
Why? I do in general, but why the celebration?
It could be entirely unfair. It's just the body language.
A little too much self-satisfaction for a guy that was 0-5 with a disgraceful
off-field. You created a tornado of issues.
That's like, hey, I'm getting on the plane home. I wasn't totally sure if I was going to get to go on the plane home, but I'm
just
definitely...
Just get on the plane that your team's on. Let's start there.
Well, that's a good point.
One step at a time.
I meant more, yeah, Shot Khan might not let me get on the plane, but wow.
It's happened in the past. Coaches do get fired coming off the London game. But, you know, even this quote after the game and referring to the kicker, again, who saved your butt, Matthew Wright, Urban Meyer said, "I don't think anybody on our team ever heard him speak until about 10 minutes ago." I don't know. Something about this guy rubs me the wrong way.
And
show some respect to that guy.
Urban Meyer was going to overtime. The game was going to overtime until Brian Flores capped. And I don't say this lightly.
Ooh.
One of the all-time worst stretches of game management I have ever seen from a head coach. There were an incredible amount of mistakes, but that last one was that he took the timeout to make them theoretically punt the ball to him on fourth down with 8 seconds to go. Instead, they could have just run a Hail Mary, so you're giving them a free Hail Mary because it would have taken that long. But instead, the Jaguars smartly it was 5 seconds left. The Jaguars smartly ran a play where they got a first down in only 4 seconds and then kicked the field goal, which was creative and it was great execution. The players deserve a ton of credit for that. But I'm not sure what Flores was expecting there. I guess he thought they would punt it, but that didn't make sense with 5 seconds. And for that to happen after he didn't take a timeout on 3rd and 20 when there was about 51 seconds left, showing no faith in Tua or his defense in that moment, after he had already challenged 2 plays in a row that he had very little chance of winning and lost both timeouts, which put them in a bad spot after they played so conservative on offense the last couple drives to set up that Jaguars. It was a rough, rough couple of minutes for Brian Flores.
I'd like to know how many times in a season a coach loses two challenges and a half, because you know this isn't 1938. Like,
how about in two plays?
Well, right, there are people in your ear saying, "No, we don't do this. Like, don't challenge this. To lose two is not good."
So yes, the Dolphins obviously taking on a lot of water, and here's what Flores had to say after the game.
You know, that starts with me. I'm not doing a good enough job of getting these guys ready to play. Not playing consistently enough. So we're not coaching well enough. And we're not playing well enough.
A big part, I don't want to say a big part because I don't want to take away from what the Patriots did over those 20 years. But a part of it, the success, was the constant cycling of these AFC East teams from one coach to the other, one quarterback to the other, Dolphins, Jets, Bills, and never finding any type of momentum. And now Dolphins fans are asking themselves again, where are we at right now? Do we still think we have the right guy at coach? Do we still think we have the right quarterback? I'm not saying they don't, because it's a bad start to a season. And there's time to right the ship still. But I mean, the fact that we're even having this conversation tells you how off the tracks
I think
gone.
They are a dark horse. And I know that we don't bring this up, but Deshaun Watson sits out there as a trade deadline possibility for them. I just still think that is
their owner has shown he's capable of surprising you in many ways. Would that possibly, or who knows? I'm sure Flores isn't feeling too good. I'm more concerned about their team building, but Flores has a huge hand in that. Him and Chris Greer have cycled through so many different players over the last couple of years, and these picks haven't quite hit. It is worth pointing out they were missing, you know, three of their top four wide receivers today, and their two cornerbacks, Xavier Howard and Byron Jones, which is supposed to be the identity of this team. I know.
Right.
I'm just pointing out, like, a lot of their best players weren't on the field today, but they lack – you know, they lack anything that they do well. You know, they really are struggling in terms of their third down defense. They dominated. What you slept through was perfect Miami
literally,
Dolphins
not figuratively.
Football.
No, I was totally asleep. Yeah.
They dominated, and they should have been up by way more than 13-3. And they got into a shell before the end of the first half. They could have easily been up in this game, something like 28-3, and it just wasn't happening.
It's a disturbing backslide because everything,
I can't
the opposite
they
was
lost
meant to be
game.
The reality.
I can't
here
believe
that.
Talked about this in August and leading into the season in early September. This Watson Dolphins dalliance, this forbidden dance that hypothetically could be going on right now. When it was early September, it was like, they're not going to do that. But I remember saying, like, if it's October, if they're 1-4, 1-5, if Tua hasn't established himself or whatever, like, it's right there now. The trade deadline is November 1st. Keep an eye on this because you know that owner – Stephen Ross is impatient and probably super hyper annoyed and thinking, I need to hit a major reboot on this franchise. Will he do that?
Anything could happen. I'm also, was it a bad move for me to even verbalize that I was asleep during the part of any
it's
NFL
fine.
Game?
You
not
can
a
catch up.
I don't think it's fine. It's fine
Greg
for me.
Bring
to,
it up you know, 2 to 3 more times.
No,
over
no.
The next week.
You did miss one of the most fun moments of the weekend, which was a Dolphins fan ran onto the field and almost kicked
that
the
was
kickoff.
Awesome.
And weirdly in
it, amazing.
Weirdly in the UK, for some reason, like, no one tackled him. No, everyone was cool. A player literally, like, low-fived him on the Jaguars. It almost was like he almost got the kickoff off. It was
right. I mean, they usually block that from television view.
Well, that's a uniquely American thing, perhaps. I don't know, but I always found it, although I've been in a stadium where this has happened as well, when the security guards get to the guy and they just, like, concuss him and pile drive him into the dirt face first at 18 miles per hour running speed, everyone's like, yeah! And it's like, does that really fitting?
Well,
about
you never
the guy?
Hear,
he's just a drunk
but
guy.
But this guy right. just was standing there around the players. There's another view of it from a fan who was in the crowd for a solid 30 seconds. And he's, like, talking to the right. players. He's talking with the official. It was very strange. If nothing else, this game was not a good game, and these weren't good teams. But at least the London fans got kind of a fun, crazy ending. So
we had reports that they were that many of the London fans were nonplussed by not sorry
some a portion
I mean,
of the
when we're getting tweets but
yes.
they're you know were they throwing
there,
beverages
there were some
what
beers
was
being thrown yeah. but on no, balance I think it was another successful international series. I'm just saying, like, when you run onto the field, you could typically say, because everybody's like, hey, man, these guys are a threat to the players, and you got to enforce to make sure they don't get it. Like, most of these guys are just bombed fat guys with their shirts off, waving their arms around. Do we really need to try to kill them?
Right, the Jaguars yeah, guy.
Or streakers. You know?
I want to know the Jaguars player who came over and, like, dapped him up, was like, oh, man, good try, man. That was,
right.
That was
we
amazing.
Don't condone this activities and let the bosses, any shadowy league figures that are listening, we don't condone fans running
no,
on the field.
No, we do not.
but perhaps we just shepherd them off the field into the little jail cell under the stadium. The beating is unnecessary. That's my take.
It's a good PSA right there.
Wasn't expected.
Let's move on.
Oh, Sunday night.
Maybe the last time your offense sees the ball. Geno Smith will drop deep. He'll pump. He'll take it. Lost the football. Knocked out by one. Recovered by Devin Bush, who circles the right way. He almost lost the ball, but he's got it at the 16. And the Smith fumble forced by the defensive star, T.J. Watt.
Ah, Mike Tirico with the call. Geno. Oh, Geno. Oh, Greggy.
Geno Smith's fumble in overtime. Covered by Devin Bush, T.J. Watt making the big plays. He does every single week. Chris Boswell kicks the field goal a couple plays later. Final, 23, Steelers. Seahawks, 20, in OT. Pittsburgh gets back to 3-3. The Seattle Seahawks, without Russell Wilson for the first time, fall to 2-4. Greggy, listen. Geno, he did some things. He did some things. There was a conservative game plan by Shane Waldron and the Seahawks, but they came back. They had fallen behind. They push it to overtime, but that Geno mistake, it's always haunted him his whole career. It happened again.
You seem to enjoy it a little too much, you know.
It's fun.
You were just like saying, this is the worst game of the year, and I don't like football anywhere. I want to go home. And then, but
Some of those lines are fabricated.
And then, yes. That was the general idea. Okay.
That was not a good game.
And then Geno fumbles it. And then it's like, Dan's like, yeah, yeah.
Do you know why I celebrated like that? Because you love Geno so much.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't a Zach Wilson-like performance, but it was okay.
Don't hit out.
If Zach Wilson went six and a half yards per attempt,
we know the script.
Got
Greg.
A couple touchdown comeback.
The
against
if
the Steelers.
Insert yeah. Jet did this, you'd be happy. Trope is strong with you, Greg. But go on, Geno blew the game. Table's yours.
It was very conservative. They ran the ball well. They came from behind. His problem has always been taking sacks, and he did. And they didn't trust their protection to hold up. I think that's why they were so conservative. And it makes sense. Alex Highsmith and T.J. Watt went wild. I mean, the box score is insane for Highsmith and Watt, considering how few times they had real dropbacks. Their offensive line got drilled there. But I thought we were headed towards a tie. That's what Mark was rooting for. Because it didn't seem like Ben Roethlisberger was going to do anything either. He had 5.7 yards per attempt on 40 throws. Like, he did less than Geno.
I mean, the Seahawks in that first half, you never would have predicted that it would have wound up in overtime to begin with. They had 65 total yards, 5 punts. They're playing around their quarterback. They came out in the second half and ran the ball really well for 2 straight touchdown drives. And, you know, you're looking at 2 essentially defunct offenses. I mean, Big Ben, you know, did a little Big Jen thing for a bit there. But then I don't trust the Steelers.
What does that mean?
I thought that he...
Why can't a big person named Jen be successful?
Well, I didn't say what he did. Maybe they won the game, so maybe...
I mean, he fumbled the ball, just, like, dropped it. That was bad.
Well, how about this?
Welcome to 2021, Mark.
Another ex-Jet, Jamal Adams, you know, has the ball ricochet off his head. That would have been a huge interception for them, and, you know...
That looked like Ben Roethlisberger... said, I'm sick of everyone saying I don't have a strong arm anymore. I'm going to try to throw the ball as hard as I can on one of the biggest plays of the game right off Jamal Adams' head 15 yards away from me. And he did it.
By the way, he could have given Jamal a light shovel pass and it would have clanked off Jamal's helmet. He has no ball skills at all. Now, I'm not salty. I'm fine. Everything's good. The thing about this is it's been a long day of football, and right. The game started at 6:30 in the morning.
Not for me, but
in London.
Right. Yeah.
And when you get to the Sunday night game and it's just trudging along and it's a Geno Smith-led Seahawks against late-period Ben Roethlisberger Steelers, it's hard to squeeze the juice out of this game, Greg. And the fact
it was competitive and close and comeback and big plays as you could possibly want, but it feels like these two teams aren't going anywhere, to your point.
You said as many big plays as you could possibly want?
I'm saying
game?
In a game like this, in terms of like a comeback and there were like meaningful moments in the fourth quarter, I mean, it was a drag. Daryl Taylor, who's been such a great story, getting stretchered off and stopping the game late for so long, like that put a damper on it. Like it, I'm not saying it was great football. I'm just saying it was like
Michelle tense. Tafoya did mention that Taylor, because I mean, when he left the field, you were wondering what condition he would be in. That he is his extremities. He's moving extremities. So that is your first sign that a positive note.
That's why you pay T.J. Watt all that money. Three passes defense, three tackles for loss, two sacks, the forced fumble. I mean, like three guys are blocking him on that play before Geno tried to step up. Mm.
So we have next week for the Seahawks, you have the Saints in primetime. Am I reading that right?
Three straight primetime games for Geno against the two of the best pass defenses in the league.
This is what the schedule makers were aiming for.
My hopes were low coming into this, and it was 14-0 at halftime, and it's not like Geno played that poorly even in the first half, but it just felt like there's no way against this defense that they're going to do anything. And I fear.
What do you, the
ratings for the Geno pod are starting to go down.
But what are you showing the next couple of teams you're playing on tape? Like, you can't treat Geno Smith this way. You've got, he made a couple throws late, and you cannot go in with this game plan next time around. You're not going to play Pittsburgh's defense.
And I'll leave you with this, Mark Sessler. The Steelers head into a bye week. They come out of the bye fully rested and go to Cleveland with revenge on the mind for a Halloween matchup.
I'm not even thinking about Cleveland right now. I mean, they have pushed me into a dark place emotionally. There's a lot of work ahead, you know. What could go wrong?
All right, Greg, I like that.
Mark said as we started to watch that game, and you know, Seattle starts coming back, and I'm like, you're rooting Seattle, right, Mark? And you're like, I don't care about the AFC North.
I am emotionally
anymore.
Detached.
I'm out of the AFC North.
Cleveland's seems determined to lose to every playoff, you know, hopeful out there. So
we should do all these, you know, games very tired and a little jet lag and all this stuff.
I will say congratulations to the Wessling brothers for once again locking it up. It was the Jaguars, and it's a tough one to figure out because Larry attempted to punish his brothers.
To undermine
the entire operation by locking up the worst team in football. But they won, so I don't know where Larry is at. Where's Larry at headspace wise? Is he annoyed?
I think it's like you went in with the villain role. Not that he's typically a villain; he's a nice fellow in every way. But then he came in with a Machiavellian plan.
That's why all his brothers call him Precious, you know, because you know Mama Wessling wanted a girl. She got Larry, last one, and so it's Precious.
Well, tonight he delivered another surprise. So.
Absolutely. And I just can't wait to see what's next with the Wessling Brothers soap opera. Like, I don't know where you go from there when you're already by week six. There's the undermining to the point where one of the brothers is trying to ruin the season for the other Wessling Brothers. Like, what happens from here? It's going
to
be exciting.
It's great delivery. It was a high bar for
him. Was he trying to ruin it, or was he trying to say, like, hey, let me make a pick. You guys didn't let me make the pick last week. Mm-hmm. Here I am getting this one right that no one saw coming.
There's no doubt that he probably felt
Hit
a little
a
annoyed
digger
and,
on that
and
one,
left
Greg.
Out, but I think he was trying to undermine the entire operation. That's how I do it.
I think he was trying to undermine the operation and send a message that I will not be overlooked in the future.
And it was their best week yet. So
I kind of love it.
Upset pick.
Like, I'm a huge Larry Wessling. Like, the Wessling brother power rankings, like, Larry surged forward in a big spot.
Man of chaos.
Off that. So we'll see what happens next. All right. That's it for Sunday Night, the flagship show. We'll be back on Tuesday. Make sure you check that out. Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Gravedigger behind the glass. Till then, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.